The Legend of Star Crash by Dolores Cannon. 1994. The discovery of the legend. For over 15 years I have been exploring history through regressive hypnosis. During that time I have become increasingly convinced that recorded history, the history which we are exposed to in school, may be only minimally accurate. And I am now even suspicious of the small percent that may be based upon fact. History as we know it is dry and lifeless, without form and substance, mostly inanimate facts and figures. Facts that rarely deal with the people who lived during those times and the emotions they felt. I feel history has also been romanticized through our literature, movies, and television, until it bears only the slightest resemblance to what really happened in the past. In my work I regularly take trips through time and space to visit people while they are alive in those bygone time periods and hear history from their own lips as it is being lived, not relived through the mind of an author, but actually while it is being experienced. I have found the real substance that history is made of, not that which is found in history books. I am a regressionist, which is a hypnotist that specializes in past life therapy, reincarnation, and the research and investigation of this phenomenon. In my work I have discovered that far from being romantic, the past was often filled with hunger, despair and frustration. Before our present-day knowledge of hygiene and germs, the world was a place of incredible filth and ignorance. I do not mean this as a put-down on our long-dead ancestors, because I suspect that our descendants a few hundred years in the future may also look back at us with the same dismay. These people did the best with what they had, and could not be expected, the legend of Star Crash, to have done otherwise, since they were dealing with the knowledge of their time, just as we are utilizing ours. But I do believe that my adventures into the past have revealed a more accurate picture of the lives of these people than the popular romantic novel or television show. Someday I intend to incorporate my findings about history into a book and show the real panorama of time, as told by those who lived it. But this present book will concentrate on the life of a man who lived so far in the past that all knowledge of his time period has been lost totally. The scientists would have us believe that if there were any human beings living during that distant time they must surely have been savages, or primitive cave dwellers. At the very least they would not be anyone we would be able to communicate with. The experts smugly deem that we are far too intellectually superior. To be fair with them I have explored past lives in prehistoric times when the subjects did relive lives of an animalistic nature, predominated by emotions, natural urges and cravings. I have also examined cases where the subjects were in the pre-human stages of development. I have found that the eternal soul adapts to its environment and learns to function within its limitations. The importance of any life is the lesson that is learned from it. But I feel this story shows that man has not really changed that much since the beginning of time. His outer trappings, his world, changes, but not the essential core, the divine spark that makes him a human being. The same feelings and emotions have always been there. Only the way we react to them and learn from them have changed. History is relevant. It is handed down to us in the manner it was perceived by the reporter, the recorder, the scribe. No human being can ever be expected to be totally objective in reporting an event. He would have to allow his own or his superior's viewpoint or opinions to enter into the narrative. To understand what I mean, one has only to observe how reporters on two different TV stations report the same news event. I have seen this occur time after time in my regression work. The thoughts of the peasant are different from the king's, and the opinions of the soldier are different from the general. Which gives the truest picture of the event? Each view is accurate for the individual that is perceiving it. It, the discovery of legend, 3. Is true for them even if it conflicts with the broader view which is recorded as historical fact. But what about the history that has not been passed down to us? Surely we cannot be so naive as to believe that what is recorded is all that there is. We cannot think that because we have no record of it, it didn't happen. I believe there must have been several huge civilizations containing thousands of people who existed long before the advent of our present history. Someday concrete evidence of them may hopefully be found. With the help of my subjects, I have returned to the time of the ancient Aztecs and Mayans living in the dense jungles. I have also explored the lost continent of Atlantis, and relived their terror as their land disappeared beneath the angry tidal waves. Just because they have faded from memory does not mean that these people did not live and love and hope and dream just as we do in our present day. I believe this story I have uncovered, and am reporting in this book, is one of those small forgotten incidents that predates our known history. Even though it deals with travelers from the stars and has a faint undercurrent reminiscent of science fiction, I believe it is really an unknown tale of people who could well be our own ancestors. People whose presence has been hidden from us until now. It would have continued to remain hidden had it not been brought forth from the dark recesses of a young girl's subconscious mind by the regressive hypnosis technique. I continually work with many different people who wish to experience regression into past lives for a wide variety of reasons. These reasons can range from simple curiosity to the search for answers to problems in their present life. I have conducted much therapy relating to the causes of phobias, allergies, illnesses, and troubling karmic relationships. Many of these people have heard about my work and contacted me, and others have been referred to me. I have never had to go searching for subjects. The interest in this phenomenon is much more widespread than people would believe. I have traveled hundreds of miles to conduct these sessions in the privacy of the subjects' homes. I always hesitate to turn anyone down because I never know which one will become the excellent subject I am looking for, the one who will provide my next amazing. 4. The Legend of Star Crush, Excursion into the Unknown. These people are never recognizable by their outward appearances, so I have no way of knowing what knowledge their subconscious possesses until they have been put into trance. The mundane and the common past life is encountered much more frequently than the bizarre. The example in this book demonstrates that I never really know what I am looking for until I find it. I never know what will spark my insatiable curiosity and inspire my research for more knowledge. I had no idea that an excellent somnambulistic subject would be found in my own backyard, so to speak. I had known Beth for several years because she had attended school at the same time as my own children. She was now approaching 30 years old, and working in an office at the local university. Although I had contact with her all during this time, we had never discussed metaphysical subjects. I had only recently discovered that she was interested in my type of work. She mainly wanted to try regression out of curiosity. As we set the date for our first appointment, I suspected she would follow the pattern which I have found common during first sessions. I discovered this repetitive pattern among 90% of first-time subjects. This is a form of proof to me, especially since the individual does not know what the pattern is, and is not aware of what I am expecting to happen. The other 10% that do not follow this pattern are usually looking for something specific, and if we are lucky, we can zero in on that objective. The majority of my subjects have no such goal in mind, and thus the pattern emerges. One characteristic of this pattern is that the first time their subconscious allows them to explore their memory files, a dull, boring, mundane life usually emerges. An insignificant life where one day is pretty much like the next, definitely not fantasy type material. I say it is not significant because it does not mean anything to me. But I am often surprised that the material has some deeper meaning to the person who is reliving it, usually an important relevance that I could never have suspected. I have boxes full of this type of material which would never be important enough for a book unless it were one compiling these people's view of through hundreds of these mundane lives, hopefully historical times. I sit, the discovery of the legend, 5, awaiting the one subject to emerge with a story worth exploring in more detail. The somnambulist is the main requirement for the type of research that I need because of their ability to literally become the other personality in every detail. This type enters a trance level so deep that they will remember very little upon awakening. As far as they are concerned, they think they have fallen asleep. Their only memories are usually snatches of scenes, similar to dreams. This type of subject is not common, and I consider myself fortunate to have located the ones that I have written about in my books. This ideal type can go into a very deep trance and virtually relive a life. Anything else, especially the life they are living at the present time, ceases to exist. In this respect, it is very similar to journeying through a time tunnel. So I consider myself a time traveler and explorer. As such, I feel I must ask every conceivable question I can think of. By doing this, I believe I have uncovered much knowledge that is unknown to the average person and possibly also unknown to historical authorities, as well. In my first session with Beth, it became immediately obvious that she was a somnambulist. It was most unusual for such excellent quality of material to come forth during the first session with a subject. Perhaps the reason was because the trust level, which is extremely important, had already been established, since I was not a stranger to her. Normally, before and during the first session, a lot of time is spent creating this type of rapport, which is essential to success. In Beth's case, this was not necessary. I was surprised at the ease with which she entered the deep-level trance state. She regressed immediately to a past life and began to release buried information. She was clearly an observer during the first 5 minutes and then totally merged with the other personality, and this waking world ceased to exist for her. Her first view was of a large field surrounded partially by pine trees. The only sign of life was some oxen yoked together in the field. Then she saw a path and had the desire to follow it. It led into a small village with about 15 or 20 houses. They were houses that were not familiar to her or me. They were built of wood with grass, rush, roofs, and shutters on the windows. One building stood out. It was different because, 6. The Legend of Star Crush, it was the only one with two stories. Its first story was built from rock and the second story of wood. She commented, "It seems to be an inn, perhaps. There's a sign hanging over the front door. I can see the shape of it. But the sun is shining wrong, I can't see what's written." I asked her to look down at herself and describe her clothing, and she was surprised to discover that she was a man. She was barefooted, wearing beige baggy pants made of undyed wool with a darker brown cloth wrapped several times around her waist. She was also wearing a leather vest that laced up the front. She remarked, "I must be a man. There are no bosoms." It was the body of a young adult with dark skin and short black hair. It is amazing that this seldom disturbs the subject to find themselves in the body of a stranger of the opposite sex. They readily accept it and continue with what they are seeing. She seemed to have a cap on her head, so she went through the motions of pulling it off and examining it. It's a leather cap. It has a medium-sized crown and a brim that can be turned up or down. And I have the brim turned down in front to help shade my eyes. The sun is shining very brightly. It's a warm day. She then put the cap back on and rubbed her hand across her chin, and my face is clean shaven. During these sessions, I must ask many questions to try to discover the time and place before we proceed further. Often, even the simplest answer can establish these things. Since his clothing was so nondescript, I asked if he had any ornaments or jewelry. Beth then discovered that she had an amulet of some sort around her neck. It was a small leather bag hanging by a thong. She went through the motions of opening it and examining what was inside of it. She announced in surprise, "There's a rock in there. Some sort of gem, unfinished, sort of rough. I want to say quartz, but it doesn't look like quartz. It has a fire in it. Part of it is cloudy and part of it is a clear black-blue color. You can see into it, the spark in there is blue-white, and the edges of the rock are black-blue. It fits easily into the palm of the hand." At this point, the strange phenomenon which I have observed many times occurred. Her present personality slipped away and she began to merge with the mind and memories of the man. I found it beside a stream. It was different. It seemed to contain a spook. "I am not Noel, the discovery of the legend, 7, edgeable on this. It was explained to me by the wise man. He told me that it contained a spirit. I could ask for guidance by looking at the rock. It is like a friend to guide you. You look at the rock, ideas come. When this occurs, I know I can proceed to ask more definite questions about the life the personality I leading. I asked if he lived in the village. Sometimes. I'm a hunter. I stay outside. I do not like being dosed in by the roof. I spend most of my time in the hills. I hunt whatever comes. What the village needs. Deer mostly. He said he used a bow and arrow, but the description of clothes and the house did not suggest a Native American. I asked if he was a good hunter. Yes. I am careful. That makes me good. You do not move too quickly or you are as noisy as a boar in heat. You be careful. You be patient. Let the stone help you and you wait. You be one with the forest. You be one with the wind. The deer comes. You apologize to the deer for taking its life, but it is needed for the village. You kill the deer. You bring it to the village. We share with all. There is one who is skillful in cutting the deer up. Another is good with working the skin and another carves the bones. It is good for all. There are some who can grow the grain. They grow enough for all. There are others who are good at fishing from the stream. I am the hunter. The only leader the village had was the wise man. He explained, he is called the wise man because he can solve problems to the benefit of all. And he is good at communing with the spirits. He knows of things not ordinarily known. It was obvious now that she had entered a deep level of trance, and I could proceed to ask for names, dates and places. In the lighter states this type of information is more difficult to obtain. He said his name was Chu In. I had her repeat it because it had a strange sound and I had difficulty with it. It was pronounced quickly so the two syllables ran together. I had more difficulty obtaining a name for the location. He explained, it is just the village. It is just us with wilderness around. We have some fields cleared. We grow in the fields, it is surrounded by woods and there are mountains nearby. But there is nobody else. It is just the land. 8. The legend of Starkrush. I have received this answer many times when a subject has regressed to a primitive lifetime. They are simple the people and where they live is the land. What could be more natural? Why do they have to have names? They are fully aware of who they are and where they are living. One way to obtain information that may establish location is to ask about the food eaten. I asked what was grown in the fields. Grains. Wheat. I am not sure what the grains are called. I'm a hunter. They taste good when they are cooked. As long as I hunt for the village, we share everything. There are some other things grown, vegetables, different kinds of beans, some roots. Kind of an orange color, red. They come in different shapes, sometimes long, sometimes round. I do not know what they are called. There are juicy fruits on the trees, very good to eat on a hot summer day. The women prepare the food for all. We have a central site where there are large kettles. They prepare stews that are real good. Each woman has a kitchen garden, I suppose for their herbs. There was still not enough information to identify a locale. So I asked about the women's clothing. He provided the description. Most of them have a long skirt. A type of a shirt with sleeves of some sort, that wraps around to support their bosoms, covering them. I do not know how they wear those confining clothes. I have never had to deal with those garments. They are basically various shades of brown, but some women have found some stones that are pretty bright blue, red, various stones. They sew these into the clothes or they wear on top to add color. Their hair is long and they keep it bound in various ways. They have things stuck in their hair, kind of like a double-pronged knife. But it is not a knife because it does not cut. It is stones attached to the hilt, so that they stick it through a bundle of hair and it holds the hair in place and it looks pretty. Most of the village people wear shoes of some sort, for they are in the village. When you are hunting you must be barefooted. The women's shoes, they fit close to the feet but they are flexible. They are made out of the leather that I supply with my hunting. They fasten on the side, or sometimes they lace up. The men. Somehow they make the sole stiffer so it will not be punctured when they are in the fields. For women. The discovery of legend. 9. Usually shoes are just up over the ankles so they are protected up to where the skirt goes. The skirt comes down to just above the ankles and their shoes go up under the skirts. I'm not sure how far. I might get slapped if I ask. I would not want that to happen. Where Tuyin was living, it apparently got very cold in the winter, so he dressed differently during that time. He wore thicker pants and a type of pullover garment with long, loose sleeves. In the colder weather he would also wear a type of hood to keep his head and ears protected. And over it all was a larger loose garment that sounded like some type of poncho. He would then wrap skins round his hands and reluctantly put on fur boots. Although he preferred to go barefooted, he said he also did not want to lose his toes during cold weather. All of these clothes were usually made of different kinds of animal skins. The women could make clothes out of some kind of fiber, but he thought the skins were warmer. Since the survival of the village depended upon Tuyin's hunting skill, he had to be prepared to venture out into the worst of weather, whether he truly wished to or not. "It depends on the food supply," he said. "If we have enough food, I stay in and be warm. If we start getting low, then it is my duty to go hunt." Tuyin did not have a regular house to live in such as the others did. He preferred to stay outdoors. But in this climate the winters would get very cold with much snow, and he would have to come inside, much to his dislike. So when he needed it, he had a small room in the two-story building. There was a large fireplace in this building, so it was warm. He had made a bed by sewing and stretching deer skins between poles. This was set on legs and about a foot off the floor, and a cover of bear skin made it quite comfortable. The only other furniture in the room was a table and bench where he usually kept water and a loaf of bread. He explained that there was another drink that was available in the village besides water. "There is a drink that the farmers make out of the fruit that is very good. It brings you up, in addition to tasting good. If you drink too much, you get very relaxed and you laugh a lot. I do not drink much of it because I like being in harmony. And I do not feel in harmony when I am laughing too much. And some of them complain of having a 10. The legend of Star Crush, pain the head, not feeling good the next morning. And that would interfere with hunting." He was obviously describing some type of wine, but the drink seemed to mostly be consumed at celebrations. It also appeared that Tuyin did not have a family. "No, I am just by myself. I'm a hunter. No permanent family. Of course I had parents, everyone does. My mother, she is very old. She may not live much longer. My father, she was not sure who was my father. When I asked if he had ever married, he did not understand the word." This is another interesting aspect of past life regression. It shows the complete absorption of the somnambulist into the other personality. I often use words and concepts that are perfectly understandable in our modern world. But if they are alien to or not present in the other entity's time period, then they cannot understand them at all. This displays most graphically that they are not associating with their present personality's mind at all, or they would be able to draw upon that information and apply it. This often puts me into awkward positions. I must try to find a simple definition for a common word so the entity will understand. This is often difficult to do on a spur of the moment. Dolores, I think you called it living under a roof. Mariga is when you live with one woman. Beth, we live with women. You have children, and then if you decide that you need to change your life, or the woman decides that she needs to change her life, then you live under the roof with someone else. And someone else comes to live with the woman. That was as close to our definition of marriage that he could come. D, then you have never done that? B, no. I do not like staying under the roof. I am outside. There is a young woman that I am friends with. We talk. I can tell her things I cannot tell others. But she wants someone to live in the village and to stay there, and I do not like living under the roof. But it is good to have someone to talk to. Usually I talk with the animals. I switched my questions to eating utensils, because sometimes answers can be found from that area. The discovery of the legend, 2d. Do the people in the village have any certain things they eat with? B, yes. The carpenter, he gets pieces of wood. They are flat pieces of wood, but he has tools to make out a hollow in them to hold what we are eating. So in case there is juice, like with a stew, it will not drip. We use our knives to cut things to the right size. The women have sticks that are hollowed out at the end for stirring the food so it will not stick. The women tend to use these, I think they are called spoons. These answers were not helping me to find the time period or locale. These apparently were a people who lived very simply, but were not primitive. D. What are their pots made out of to cook their food in? B. Usually clay. Their ice-own pot that the wise man uses. I do not know where he got it. It is made out of something hard, not stone, but like metal that shines. This was the first introduction of a strange element into this regression, an indication that all was not as simple and ordinary as it first appeared. This did not sound like the common cooking pot. D. It shines. It's not a dark color. B. It depends on the spirit. Sometimes it is a shiny reddish golden color. Sometimes it is black. I suspect he may have two different pots, but they both look alike and he says that the color changes because of the spirits. Perhaps it is like my rock. The legends say that the things we have were brought by the old ones long ago.